At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, March 7th, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm excited for this hour with you. Another interesting day in markets, more Fed news, more economic news as we head into the big news tomorrow, which is the jobs number. And there were a couple of pieces of economic data points that came out yesterday and today that hint at what we're going to see tomorrow. So we're going to look at those numbers as well as your calls. Your calls are number one. And we can talk about whatever's on our mind, but it's really about you and what's on your mind. So I hope you pick up the phone. If you're listening live, great. We'd love to talk to you live. If not, leave a message and we will answer on a future show. The number is the same as always, 888-99-CHART. Now, before I get to the rundown of what we're going to do today, I want to talk about our new Market Madness contest, the InvestTalk Market Madness contest. And it's basically pitting 64 companies and head-to-head matchups over multiple days. It's going to be pretty much lined up with the basketball tournament, the NCAA basketball tournament. And each day, there's going to be winners. And we're going to preview them the day before. It's going to be pretty exciting. And you can enter. It's free. And you could win $1,000. And you can test your skills in this unique competition by heading over to investtalk.com, downloading your brackets, filling them out, and completing your brackets using the link provided. Now hurry. The deadline is March 17th. So you only have 10 more days. Now let's talk. We're going to talk about the market performance today. We're going to run down some show topics, but as usual, we are going to hit our first caller question now.
Mark from San Diego, checking in. Walgreens Food Alliance. I believe it's WBA is the symbol. Big Dow stock's been down for a while. Anyway, your thoughts, buy, sell, hold. I have some, and I don't know what to do with it. Small amount. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is pretty simple. You have to decide whether or not they can deal with the debt problem that they have. They have a large amount of long-term debt, total long-term debt. I'm just looking at this. About 16 billion net on an $18 billion market cap. They have negative free cash flow. So that's not a good situation to be in. And that's why the company continues to plumb to new lows. And they recently, I believe, cut their dividend. And this is an example, once again, of people chasing the dividend. If you look based on the previous dividend payout, the yield is 8%. But going forward, now that they cut it, they cut it from 48 cents to 25 cents. And this is inevitably what happens. If you're seeing a stock in a downtrend that has a high dividend, an above average dividend, say 5% or more, the very first thing you should ask yourself is, what is the debt situation? Because companies that have that level of yield that is sustainable, it's not going to be in a sustained downtrend. Now, they might be going sideways or something because they have little growth. But the ones that have a debt problem, they're in a downtrend. And this one has been in a downtrend ever since. Let me pull back on a chart here. I got to go way back to a monthly chart. peaked out in 2015. 2015 is when this peaked out, over $96 per share. Now we're at $21 per share. So I would say just sell it, move on. Based on their financial performance, things don't look like they're headed in a good direction. It's still profitable, but all those profits are going to right-size their balance sheet, not to you, the shareholder, through dividends, etc. So I would just move on and find a better use for the capital. Remember, there's opportunity cost by holding that name. Now, our main focus point today concerns this question. Is a reversal of fortunes on the horizon for small caps? That's what we're going to cover, amongst others, over the next 45 minutes. We're also going to discuss an underappreciated aspect of the economy over the past year, and that is productivity. Not a lot of people talk about it. Talk about inflation and growth, which productivity is a part of the growth discussion, but it is also part of the inflation discussion, but very few people discuss productivity. So we're going to unpack the trends there. Also, PIMCO, the largest bond manager in the world, came out with a new report arguing that the term premium is likely headed higher. Now, what does that mean? That means that longer dated bond prices are headed up. And there are investment implications for this. And we'll talk about what they are discussing. And in related news, something I wanted to get to yesterday was really about equity returns going forward and what current valuations tell us about the expected returns for stocks going forward. We also have some voice bank questions. One is on Coupang, CPNG, and the other is on SoFi Technologies, SOFI. And of course, you and your questions, your finance and investment questions drive this show. So don't be afraid to pick up the phone and give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. But please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
All right, let's go to Sam in San Francisco. He wants to talk about Apple. You there, Sam?
Yes, I'm here.
Great.
I'm trying to get more information on what your thoughts on Apple. Is it a company that should be on hold? Because as you can see, it's gone down so far, and it seemed like it's going below the actual low. But what's your thoughts on that?
Well, it is into some support here around the 170 level. Now, this is the start of our buy zone for our clients. So we just recently picked up a very small position. I would say a quarter of what our goal is, because now we think it's probably fairly valued at these levels. So it's not cheap, but it's a great company. So we want to buy great companies at fair prices, and now it's at a fair price. So it's not, once again, it's not cheap, but you're starting to get into a buy zone. And so I would maybe start stepping into it slowly, not aggressively, because this isn't You know, it's not something that is showing signs of turning around tomorrow, but from a long-term perspective, it's now at decent valuations. So it just depends on your outlook. If you're just trying to get into it for a trade, probably not. But from a long-term perspective, this is an area that Apple starts to become attractive, right around the 170 okay. mark. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Now let's grab another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin, Luke, and best wishes to Steve. This is Andrew from Walnut Creek. Found an interesting stock. I put a small part of money in it just to track it. The backstory, how it started, is pretty interesting, too, if you care to read on it. The company's name, I understand, is pronounced Coupang. The symbol is C-P, N like Nancy, and then G like George. It's an e-commerce company that's based in Seattle, but it operates in South Korea. It's described as the Amazon of South Korea. It's a new company. They've only been around for about 3 years. They got good in capital investment. It looks like they're starting to become profitable now, and they are trying to break into the Taiwan market. Anyways, I think they have a good future. Just curious to see what your take is. Thanks so much. I'll be listening on the podcast.
All right, looking at Coupang, I think it's how you say it. CPNG is the symbol. Earnings are expected to rise 13% this year and 100% next year to 60 cents per share. That would be all-time high in earnings. And like the caller said, they're just recently profitable last year. So that's a great thing. And the chart is starting to show some signs of bullish behavior as well. After, you know, an IPO, and this is a good example of when IPO in 2021, IPOs tend to be poor investments, especially over the coming year plus at the valuations that the company goes out at. And that was in the $50 or $60 range. Now it's at $18.37 after rallying from an all-time low of around 10 bucks. So the technicals are firming up. The business is getting much better, and I like that. Let me look at the fundamentals, however. Price to sales ratio, 1.3, not too bad. Enterprise value to EBITDA is a little high, around 32. 1.7 billion in free cash flow on a $33 billion market cap, $30 billion enterprise value. Not bad. I'm going to give this one generally a thumbs up. I don't think it's cheap, but I also don't think it's expensive. I like the profitability, 46% return on equity. I like the balance sheet, and everything is trending in a positive direction, including the charts. So this would have to continue, right? It can't just be a kind of a flash in the pan, 1 year earnings trend, but all the trends are good. So I'm going to give this a thumbs up in Coupang. CPNG is the symbol. Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly positive day. I talked yesterday about, hey, that sell-off on Tuesday was a potential topping sign for risk assets. And you got a pause day kind of yesterday, but today was certainly bullish. So kind of negated what you saw on Tuesday. Monday is the expiration of the BTFP situation, so with the Fed and central and the banks, and so could that create a risk-off scenario after that? I think that's still something I'm going to watch for. Tomorrow is the jobs number, so that will be a market-moving event as well. And next week is OPEX, so I definitely expect potential fireworks over the next week. If we don't get any over the next week or week and a half, then I think the uptrend kind of remains intact. All right, we're going to a quick break. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is all about above average investing for the average investor.
And the question is, during a market downturn, do dividends stay fairly steady?
I wanted to see if you thought that was a safer place to park the money for long term.
Just kind of wondering if this stock is a value trap.
What's your question? You're the best person to ask it. 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Sammy in San Francisco, who wants to talk about Google.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to get your thoughts on Google. Do you think it's just a good point right now to get in?
Well, technically, it is at the 200-day moving average, and that is support. You saw a little bounce today. But I continue to believe that Google is going to be the biggest loser from the AI revolution, if there, you know, if there is one. So I think there is huge risk in Google. Remember, they're a dominant player in search. And if suddenly people turn to large language models that potentially could be integrated into our devices, like Apple. I know Apple is talking about the rumor is that in their next WDC conference this summer, AI is going to be a big focus there. So if Siri becomes AI driven, and now we do Google searches, or we do searches instead of Google, we do it elsewhere, that's going to be a huge hit. And you're already seeing this trend begin. Now, it's not widespread, but also the proliferation of large language models isn't widespread either. So while technically short-term it is at support, I still reserve judgment on Google until I see these trends and how well Google can, I don't even want to say compete, because even if they can compete within, ChatGPT and all these other AI tools that are being rolled out, then they're just simply competing in a very crowded competitive marketplace. And how do you monetize it is the question for them and others. And they're very reliant on everyone's habit of Googling everything. And if that habit changes, Google's business, at least on that side, will be decimated. I look at it very similarly to Facebook and Instagram. Early 2010s, Facebook bought Instagram. But the Facebook, when they went public, the first couple of years, Facebook didn't do very well, because the Facebook platform itself was dying. And they basically were saved by their Instagram purchase, because they were able to refocus their efforts on Instagram, rolling out ads there, and being that, making that an ad platform that can grow. I don't see with Google another part of their business that they can grow. Yes, YouTube's growing, but it's already big. It's already monetized. You know, I don't see AI really disrupting that. But the majority of their business is not that. It's search. And so I think there's a justifiable reason why Google is starting to underperform the broad market, other tech stocks, et cetera. So I just don't want to get in front of that. And to me, it's continue wait and see how this this all develops. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I know that you took a previous call, right, on Apple. So If I were to ask you between the two stocks, which one do you think is at a stronger position right now? It sounds like it's Apple, correct?
I do think it's Apple because of that platform. They can, once again, roll out their AI, whatever they're working on that. It's a very sticky business, sticky platform, whereas Google Search, the switching costs are very easy, right? I have an iPhone. A ton of people have iPhones, and to switch that platform, to take all of your data that's been accumulating over the last decade plus for most people, is just a hard sell. And I think the business model of Apple, of all the Mag 7 names, is by far the strongest. Now, near term, there are some headwinds and some issues that's dragging the stock down. But if I'm picking one or the other, I'm definitely picking Apple. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today concerns this question. Is a reversal of fortunes on the horizon for small caps? And if you look at many data points beyond just the last 10, 15 years, you will see that Small caps tend to outperform large caps in over long periods of time, which suggests that the recent outperformance of large caps is an anomaly and that a rebound in small caps, number one, is in the offing. And then you look at valuations. They're compelling as well. Small cap valuations are low relative to their own history and in relation to large caps. Now, it doesn't mean you just go buy small caps overall, because quality matters as well. And there's a much larger dispersion in quality in the small cap space than there is in the large cap space. So buying the indexes in small caps doesn't work out quite as well as it does in large caps. For example, active fund managers in the small cap blend category beat the Russell 2000 in roughly 69% of rolling three-year periods from 2009 to 2023. That number is 33% if you're looking at large cap growth. So I've said this many times, when you're indexing, pretty much large cap stocks is the only place that it tends to do okay. Active management and those that can identify quality, they're the ones that tend to outperform. So you want to avoid places like biotech and regional banks in the small cap space, because there are a lot of those and they have risky business models, sometimes no business models for many of the biotech names. So the answer here is, don't just buy small caps in aggregate. Make sure that you're buying the quality names by either buying individual companies or a manager that knows how to find those quality names. Now we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your questions now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Richard in Santa Clarita, looking at Corning. GLW is the symbol. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I own a small position in it, and I was, when I'd gotten, I was kind of looking for long-term, maybe some growth, but it really hasn't fluctuated. You know, it doesn't go up or down too far too much, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts are as a long-term hold.
Well, this is a slow growth business, and you can see that with earnings. Pre-pandemic, they were $1.76. Last year, earnings were $1.70. This year, earnings are supposed to be $1.87. So if you kind of see through the COVID era, when people bought a lot of things, physical goods, which have a lot of Corning glass in them, then what's the growth here? There's not a whole lot. And now it doesn't mean it's a bad company or a terrible business. In fact, it's a reasonably good business. It's longer term return on equity tends to average somewhere in the low teens, which isn't great, but it's not terrible either. But that's also why the stock has really gone nowhere, right? If you're looking at a monthly chart, it is in an uptrend. So it is making a series of higher highs and higher lows. That's positive. But it's not gangbusters, right? 2008, it was trading at $27 per share. Now it's at $32.60.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's slow growth. It's a fine business. You'll do okay. It's not that risky because their products are in so many applications, including, I believe, the iPhone still. And so you're going to get that nice 3.4% dividend yield. It has some debt, but not a dramatic amount. And you're just going to probably do okay. If you want something that's relatively low risk, lower risk in the equity spectrum, this is the type of name. But frankly, I think there's better uses of your capital. I think you can find mm-hmm. better opportunities out there than this. So
it's almost like a value stock.
Well,
kind of.
No, it's just a low growth business. I wouldn't say it's a value stock because it's not really that cheap. Okay, you're talking about a 19 times earnings. It's trading at what the market is. And it's not growing dramatically. So why am I paying market multiple for an okay business with low growth? It's kind of a blah stock, to be honest with you. So it's fine, but I think you can find a better company with that capital.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about productivity. And it's an under-discussed aspect of the economy. A lot of why that is because most people have a difficulty understanding what drives it. But productivity gains are very important to long-term growth of the economy. Productivity gains means that companies are getting more out of the same amount of work, which means more growth and little to no inflation. And in the near term, people will say, oh, inflation's down and the economy's bad. Well, not really, because the economy is slowing, but it's still growing, right? When I say it's slowing, it means that its growth is slowing, but it's still growing. And inflation continues to ebb. Not back to the 2% level, but certainly from the high single digits to the low single digits. And this has a strong impact on asset prices, as you've seen as of late. The belief is that there's more capacity for growth out there in the economy than was expected, which means more profit growth. And more profit growth without requisite inflation that would cause the Fed to get even more hawkish, to drain more liquidity out of the market. Right? Because if the economy overheats, that's when the Fed has to get uber aggressive. And those rate cuts that are supposed to be on the table this year come off. And you could potentially see rate increases. And all of that is because of productivity. Now, a lot of that productivity gains, those productivity gains of late have to do with pandemic renormalization. And the new way we're doing business in the way that think of working from home. For most people, they're more productive. They're not spending 20, 30, 60, 90 minutes a day driving from home to work. They're able to be more productive there. And the hope going forward is that things like AI and other technological innovations will keep productivity growth sustained. Maybe you have a boom like the 60s or the 1990s. And these productivity gains have had a strong impact on why cyclical sectors are doing better than defensive ones. First off, defensive ones, they're bond proxies in many ways, and interest rates are going up. That's negative. And many of them have a lot of debt because they've been paying out those dividends and their shareholders rely on them, and that becomes a bigger problem as well. But if you're a cyclical company, not paying out big dividends, not having a stretched balance sheet, you're doing great. And those companies are doing much better. And this flows into the credit markets as well, and why credit spreads for corporate bonds remain near multi-year lows. Because, hey, if the economy will continue to grow, that means profits will grow and these bonds won't default. Now, the risk to this is that the productivity gains won't be repeated, that AI is overhyped, and those real applications for productivity gains are further off into the future. So that's a question you have to ask yourself. Can these productivity advances be sustained, or is the market priced in an improvement that just won't last? Now, we love taking your calls during the weekday live stream, but of course, we're always happy to take your Invest Talk questions anytime on our 24/7 voice bank at 888-99-CHART. So let's play one of those right now.
Hey guys, Chuck from Clayton. Prayers for Steve. Question for Justin and Luke. Have a holding in MLI, Mueller Inns Incorporated, Mary Lincoln, Ida. Had it for about 3 years now. Been very consistent company. Wondering if they're hitting a peak. Are they a position where I should start selling off some of my shares? They've gone from about 3% of my portfolio up to about 5% with their growth. Looking forward to hearing about your thoughts on the company. Thank you.
All right, looking at Mueller Industries, and this is a name that has had tremendous growth since the pandemic. Pre-pandemic, they only made 90 cents per share in 2019. Last year, $5.30 per share. Huge growth. And so the stock has gone from pre-pandemic levels around 16, called the mid-teens, now to $51.84 a share. And it's a $6 billion company. And what do? They make copper, brass, aluminum, and plastic products, mainly for piping systems, industrial metals, and climate control systems as well. So think of applications for HVAC, water distribution, refrigeration, automotive, etc. And their margins have certainly expanded. Operating margins now are 21.5%. Pre-pandemic, they were at about 7.5%. Now, I will say those operating margins are tailing off just a bit, but still at pretty high levels. Peaked out in the first quarter of last year at around 22.6%. Now we're at 21.57%. That's still pretty good. And they have no debt. So what are they doing with that cash flow of $600 million trailing 12 months? They've generally been buying back shares. That's a positive. They are paying a dividend, and that certainly could go up as well. You know, it's in an uptrend. I wouldn't mess with it too much. 5% is pushing the limits of what I want your portfolio to be exposed to, any one company. But it's not so egregious like yesterday that caller had 20% of their portfolio in Blackstone. So what I would do is I would have a tight stop on this. The 50-day moving average, right now that's around $48 per share. If it breaks below that 50-day, that's when I would trim it back. Maybe bring it back in line with that 3% original allocation. So that's the way I would think about it. Nothing to worry too much about the valuation right now. So that's why I would keep a tighter stop on it. Now, the first quarter is moving along fast. Yeah, we're almost into that second quarter, into March Madness. Hopefully all of you join our March Madness contest. But more importantly, the question you have to ask yourself is, are you prepared for these times? These volatile times, these interesting times that often get people spooked. Either ultra bearish or you're ultra bullish. And the reality is typically somewhere in the middle. And is your portfolio aligned with longer term trends, not short term trends, but longer term trends? And is aligned with your risk tolerance so that you're not chasing the market when it goes up and you say, oh, I'm lagging the market, I need to buy more equities. That's typically what people do when their portfolio is misaligned with their risk tolerance level. When things are good, they tend to sell their safer assets and buy more aggressive assets at expensive prices, typically near the highs, and vice versa. When they're too aggressive, they're fine when everything's going well, but when things turn the other way, they feel the pain, they feel the risk that they're taking, and then they sell out at the wrong time. But the reality of a good investor is that you're aligned. You're aligned with the market, you're aligned with your risk tolerance level and your goals so that you're not sweating market swings up or down. And so if you need to get a second opinion on whether your portfolio fits that criteria, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Luke at our company KAPP Financial, where we operate the same philosophy, which is independent thinking and shared success. And we practice parallel investing, which means you invest right alongside our clients. So head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button on the top right-hand side of the screen and fill that out, and we'll get right back to you. Now, this is InvestTalk, now with over 58 million downloads, and our work continues in 30 seconds. So hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my question is about a 457 retirement plan. It's not something that I've heard many people talk about. I know it might not be offered from everybody's employer, but it's my understanding that that is an account that you can withdraw from when you retire, even if you're not at the retirement age of 59 and a half, and it's taxed just like a 401k. I haven't heard much about it, but I just didn't know if you guys could extend on that and give any insight about that account. Thank you very much. I'll be listening on the podcast.
Are you looking at a 457 plan? And the answer is, yeah, you can, after you leave your job, take penalty-free withdrawals. But your company obviously has to offer that. And typically 457s, I believe, are government jobs. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, with investing in a 457. They're, like you said, they're just like 401ks. They have a little different rules. And you have to look at what they are. They have different limits. There are catch-up contributions that you can make, et cetera. But yeah, it is a bit different. And all these retirement plans, they have their own wrinkles. But it depends on what your company offers. And certainly it's important to go into your contributions with your eyes wide open, understanding the rules. And that goes for anybody that has a 403B or any other type of workplace retirement plan. Don't just throw money in it without understanding your options of taking money out, the tax consequences, etc. But thanks for the call. Now, on the next InvestTalk, we'll look into this question. Is it realistic to expect inflation to fall in 2024? Inflation dropped sharply last year after reaching its highest level in over 40 years in 2022. But for this year, a case can be made for inflation returning to normal levels, the Fed's 2% target. But will it? We'll talk about that tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. Invest Talk.
Hi, I was hearing Justin talk about gold yesterday during the podcast, and I was looking at my position. I currently own Franklin Nevada, FNB. I also own AEM. I did own Newmont, but I got stopped out around 29. I was wondering what you think is the better company to reinvest in between those three, FNB, AEM, or NEM. Thank you very much.
Well, that's difficult because I like all three. Franklin Nevada has the best long-term returns. AEM has had the best near-term performance from a pure gold miner. Remember, Franco Nevada is a streamer, so it's going to have more stability long term, but it's not going to have quite the upside correlation with gold prices. Still good, still will be correlated, but you know, the miners, pure miners, can have much bigger price moves. So if you go based on the chart, AEM is probably the strongest, and then Franco Nevada has some issues near term with Panama. If they can resolve that, I think that could have a big boost as well. So if I'm going to put them in order, I'd probably see AEM, Franco-Nevada, and Newmont, but I like them all. All right, lastly, let's talk a bit about a post from PIMCO. Remember, PIMCO is the largest bond investor in the world. And what they talk about is the term premium. Term premium is simple. The longer you lock up your money, the more you should get paid. Meaning, what's the yield on something that matures in the short term versus something that matures many years into the future? And historically, the ones that mature many years into the future, they tend to have higher yields, except for when the yield curve is inverted, like it has many times over the past few years. And frankly, the term premium has decreased ever since the early 80s, when it was about 5%. Okay, that was the term premium, the 10-year premium between very short-term rates and the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield. Now it's around zero. And what they argue is that this could be a massive long-term shift. Now, probably won't happen all at once, but it'll happen gradually. And if we get back to a normal inflationary environment, like we were, say, in the early to mid-90s, well, the term premium then was around 2%. Meaning, if the Fed funds rate is, let's say, 5.25 today, the 10-year would be at 7.25. When in fact, the 10-year right now is at a little over 4. And what they talk about is that the U.S. has run a budget deficit for over 2 decades. And there's near certainty that interest expense will continue to rise. And that the exorbitant privilege that we have today is being exploited by governments, by our government. And they're doing that with fiscal dominance, meaning no matter what happens, they're just spending more. And in many instances, it's not even bills that are being passed. It's bills that were passed decades and decades ago, and debt that's accumulated, and when the Fed has rates, when they're raising rates, interest expenses go up. And it creates, in many ways, a debt spiral. Now, typically, the way that the term premium goes up is the Fed cuts rates on the short end, and the long end stays relatively the same. But what they're saying is this could be the opposite, meaning because of the spending, maybe the Fed doesn't cut much at all, or if at all. And in that case, you might start to see the long end go up, because the fear of inflation, the fear of just continual supply of new debt being issued. And this is going to have major ramifications on equities, real estate, all types of assets that rely on that risk-free rate of the 10-year yield. So continue to argue, and I agree, that you want to stay on the short end of the yield curve if you are investing in bonds. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember to submit your bracket for our Market Madness contest for your chance to win $1,000 by heading over to investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.